Krishnamurti is in town to proclaim that there is no such thing as mind and spirit, and that spiritual seekers are wasting their time meditating, praying, and worshipping. To give you some idea of just how radical a doctrine UG is propounding, or perhaps not propounding, let me give you an idea. This is a quote from Mind is a Myth, Disquieting Conversations with a Man Called UG. Making love is war. Cause and effect is the shibboleth of confused minds. Yoga and health foods destroy the body. The body and not the soul is immortal. There is no communism in Russia, no freedom in America, and no spirituality in India. Service to mankind is utter selfishness. Jesus was another misguided Jew, and the Buddha was a crackpot. Mutual terror, not love, will save mankind. Attending church and going to the bar for a drink are identical. There is nothing inside you but fear. Communication is impossible between human beings. God, love, happiness, the unconscious, death, reincarnation, and the soul are non-existent figments of our rich imagination. Freud is the fraud of the 20th century. Here endeth the lesson. Well, UG Krishnamurti, welcome to Sunday Night Talk. And also to join us for this conversation this evening, Dr. David Milliken, head of the ABC's religious department, and one who has a fair bit to be answerable for if any of the above is true. David most recently was co-author of a book, Worlds Apart, a Christian response to the New Age movement, which he wrote with Neville Drury. David, welcome to you.
Good night, John.
So, UG, if I could ask you first, what is the point of living at all?
I would like to go about that in a roundabout way. And I'm facing two double-barreled guns. And the way you have introduced me is going to create problems, and a lot of questions will be thrown at me because you have the question-answer session after the so-called discussion tonight. Let me say a few words before we enter into discussion or conversation or whatever you want to call it. I'm afraid in the very nature of things, it is going to be a monologue because there isn't much room for a discussion or conversation after you listen to what I am going to say. I was born in a very religious family. I was surrounded by sages, saints, and saviors of mankind. I lived with masterminds, murderers, thieves, rapists, con men, name it. As a little boy, one question cropped up in my mind. What do I want? Everything I want is what the people around me wanted me to want. Everything I thought only what people wanted me to think. Do I have any wants of my own? Do I have any thoughts of my own? Then naturally, the spiritual quest or whatever you want to call it started very early in my age. I was very much interested in the natural questions, the existence of God, the nature of human consciousness, the purpose and meaning of life. Then I decided, let me leave this question of the existence of God to the theologians and deal with the cosmological, the ontological, and teleological proofs of the existence of God. And then the question of the nature of human consciousness. Naturally, I had to study psychology to get an answer for that kind of a thing. But at the same time, from the very beginning, I did not find any way of finding out whether there is any such thing as consciousness, human consciousness at all. How is my consciousness different and distinct from the cow that is looking at me, the dog that is looking at me? And so I questioned, I studied psychology, the six schools of psychology. What is this mind that these people are talking about? I don't see any mind. And then I decided to go to my professor just before my final examination. I did my psychology along with philosophy. Philosophy was my major and psychology was minor. That was just before the examination, and I put this question to him. He was probably surprised to see me just before the examinations, and I asked him the question, is there a mind? I don't see any mind. Then he was the only one who gave me a very satisfactory, plain, blunt answer. You should never ask this basic question. You have to take it for granted that there is such a thing as mind. If you want your degree, the master's degree, you write whatever you have memorized, and then you will get a degree and you will add names to it.
Goethe made much the same observation. I think it was in Faust, wasn't it? And if to metaphysic you must fall, then write it down, sir, every bit, as if the Holy Ghost dictated it.
And then the question of the meaning and purpose of life intrigued me always. I didn't see any meaning. What is there? I just eat, talk, live. And then, of course, the sex was not part of my life because I pursued the spiritual quest or whatever you want to call it. And naturally, the denial of sex, celibacy, continence was very essential for your spiritual pursuit. I was really interested in enlightenment. I wanted to be like Buddha. I wanted to be like Jesus. I wanted to be like all the spiritual teachers. That was the only thing that I was interested in at that time. And nobody could help me, and nobody could give me these answers I wanted for myself. I had no way of finding out the answers for myself and by myself. And every teacher I approached said, you have not done enough. You have to do more and more of the same, and you will find out the answers for yourself and by yourself. So that left me with hope, and more hope, nothing happened. So I am not exaggerating when I say that I have learned nothing. That is an exaggeration, precious little, either from spiritual teachers or from secular teachers. So this question haunted me. What do I want? What do I want? But it never occurred to me that this want, the want different from what the others wanted me to want, was also a want. So what do I do to get what I want? So the only way I could find an answer was to think. So then it occurred to me that wanting and thinking are one and the same. It doesn't matter what I want, whether it is enlightenment or the desire to run away with my next door neighbor's beautiful wife. Why we make this distinction? Why we condemn this, and why we consider that to be socially acceptable and the only thing that we should pursue in our life to attain enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, God realization. So this went on and on and on. I think I'm giving a talk, but anyway, going back to the question, the meaning and purpose of life. Let me tell you, one 96-year-old man visited me. He was so weak, frail, and he could not walk. And he sat on a two-wheeler and came all the way. He heard of me. He thought that was the most important and interesting thing for him to do was to meet an enlightened man. Well, anyway, I didn't know how he thought that I was an enlightened man. He asked me this basic question, what is the meaning and purpose of life? Then I asked him, you are 96 years old. You have written a lot of books, mostly on the meaning and purpose of life. And if you have not found out the meaning of life and the purpose of life in 96 years, when the hell you are going to find out the meaning and purpose of life? I don't know if there is any meaning of purpose in life. So when you want to know the meaning of life, we really do not know what they really want to know. Life is something which we cannot touch, capture, contain, and give expression to it. We can define life. The scientists can talk about life. The biologists can give us a lot of stuff on the question of life. But really, we do not know what is life. And so there is no point in discussing the question, what is life? But people are concerned about the basic problem of living in this world.
The next question then really is, what is happiness?
You see, people are not really interested in all these abstract things. What
people are interested in being happy.
Only in one thing, the basic thing, whether he's an Australian or an American or a Russian or an Indian or an African, he wants to be happy. And not only he wants to be happy, but he wants that happiness to be permanent. Happiness does not exist. People ask me, you are an enlightened man. I don't know how the hell they know that I'm an enlightened man. I have no way of knowing that I'm an enlightened man. Because the knowledge that tells you that you are an enlightened man is absent here. I have no way of knowing who the hell am I. This question has no meaning.
So, Nietzsche, can I put to you this? I've read through your book, which has the most wonderful disclaimer in the front of it. You disclaim any right to be referred to as a guru. You're saying that you're just whistling a song, and if people hear it, then you're happy about that. If they don't, and they don't turn up, then you're going to watch television and get on
That's
with your
I'm
life.
That's what I'm doing here.
Yes.
Most of the time, the Australian television here. And you see, the only thing that I'm interested in is commercials. Really, see, I don't think I'll buy anything that they are advertising, you see, you know. All these ad posters you have in the underground everywhere, they fascinate me. What impresses me most is the sales pitch. You see, I don't think I will ever buy anything that they are selling, but the way they are selling and how people fall for that kind of a thing is always interests me.
Again, they're selling happiness, aren't they?
They are selling happiness. And we are, people have completely disillusioned. That may be a very high-sounding word. They are dissatisfied with the conventional answers that people have been giving them for centuries. And so when once you realize that those answers are not helpful to them, that they are brainwashed to believe that one day, doing the same thing over and over again, they will achieve their whatever they are interested in achieving, their spiritual goals or material goals.
So people are wasting their time going to church.
Well, the church has failed, you see.
But
if I say God is irrelevant, people always say that you are an atheist. And now comes along an agnostic who sits on the fence, as it were, who is neither a theist nor an atheist. But God is the ultimate pleasure. See, whether God created man or man created God, that question we leave it to the theologians. It is too much for people to say that man out of fear created God. And so, why people want God? God is the ultimate pleasure. We all know that happiness is transient, pleasure is transient. We want permanent happiness and permanent pleasure.
You're on Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio. On ABC Radio around Australia, we're talking with Yuji Krishnamurti and David Milliken on what is the purpose in life and, in fact, whether or not there is any purpose to life. Your calls are going to be welcome to this discussion a little later on, but I'll give you a telephone number now if you'd like to write it down. 0800 028 8800 from wherever you are in Australia, except Western Australia. 0800 028 8800 to join in this conversation on purpose.
Yes. Eugene, look, I'd like to just explore really who you are and what you're saying, because much of what you say I find most intriguing. Because at one level, you do seem like an iconoclast, a skeptic. And we have too few really strong and clear-minded skeptics today. But you are saying to people, don't worry about the search. Turn away from desire. And in a way, it sounds like a very sort of radical form of Buddhism. But you are saying that in that moment when the search is actually given up or left, that's when you find some sort of peace.
We fail to make the distinction between the search and the one who is seeking. This is very difficult to understand. You see, even the skeptics are not really skeptics. It's a label they put themselves on and we put on others. But the skeptic is still searching for something.
Would that be true of you?
No.
Do you see yourself as in that state?
No. You see, the question is, what is it that we want? What do you want? When people come to see me, I ask them this question, what do you want? What do you want? They want 10 different things. Mm. So how do you go? It doesn't matter what you want, whether it is...
Ultimately, though, it's two things, isn't it? It's happiness and peace.
Yes. Happiness and... I don't know what exactly you mean by peace.
Or rest.
A sense of security, I guess.
The peace is an artificially created, thought-induced state of mind.
Well, is happiness...
The silence. The happiness is a sensation.
Mm.
What has happened to me is a very simple thing. When everything failed to find out the answers for my questions, the question disappeared. How it disappeared, I really do not know. When once the stranglehold of thought is not controlling and pushing this body to function in a way in which the body cannot really and naturally function.
I was going to ask how... We should tell people, in fact, how you got to this position, because that's an interesting story in its own right. And to make it absolutely clear, you are no relation at all to Jay Krishnamurti of Theosophy fame, even though you have a deep association in your past with Theosophy
and
Krishnamurti. You in fact knew him very well.
Fairly well.
But my association with Krishnamurti
and the Theosophical Society ended in 1953.
And you now say, as a result of reflecting on seeing him in action in Geneva, that you went through an experience which you called a calamity, which made you give up this whole idea of seeking for truth.
No, I did not give up.
Correct me.
I did not give up, and the problem is the language.
Yes.
When I use the word I, it's a first-person singular pronoun, and I have to use you referring to you. So somehow through a miracle or some strange chance, the question disappeared. I did not get any answer for my question at all. It disappeared. And that I was left with no answers for my questions, and that there was nothing there to be free from. I was trying to be free from sex. I was trying to be free from desire. I was trying to be free from this, that, and the other. But odd me was, what is it that I have been doing all my life, trying to be free from this and that? And the ultimate thing, the freedom, which will free me from all the other things that I am trying to be free from. What I am left with is there is nothing there to be free from. So that was not part of my knowledge. This is the most difficult thing to put across to the listeners. What happened? I really don't know. See, that's the reason why I use this Peanuts comic strip, you see. Has anything happened? I really don't know. There is no way I can tell myself that this is me, you see. that this is now different from what it was before. I'm not trying to mystify this. It may sound very mystifying and utterly mystifying if I put it that way. So what I have found is this memory. What is this memory? You see, I studied psychology, as I told you. 50 years ago, it sounded very intelligent and very interesting, the deficient to recall a specific thing at a specific time. So we memorized that and repeated that. And later on, I discovered that all that they have found, the brain physiologists, through their research, was only born out of their study of the abnormal and the sick and brain-damaged people. But where is this memory? What is this memory? Always bothered me. See, is there any such thing as memory? Is there any such thing as consciousness? Where are these thoughts? The thoughts are not self-generated, not spontaneous. Where are they? Do I have any thoughts other than the thoughts that are put in there? So I was a headless man wandering in the streets of London, wondering where are these thoughts. Then I suddenly discovered that the thoughts are not self-generated, not spontaneous. So the brain is just a container and a reactor. Brain is singularly incapable of creating these thoughts. This is not what I have discovered through my study.
So the brain is not a processor?
No, not at all. It is just like, you see, a computer.
But how then do you get insights like that which came to Einstein?
These are not... that was a sort of a mystical experience. I don't think he really freed himself from the stranglehold of the knowledge up to that, scientific knowledge, accumulated knowledge up to that point. If I may use a scientific term, you see, it was a sort of a quantum jump, if I may use that. But really it was not a quantum jump because he had to link it up with the knowledge up to that point.
No, I'm interested to know what is happening to you now. What state are you in?
The state implies it's some sort of a static condition. It is a movement. And what actually is happening now at this moment is responding to the questions which you are asking.
So you're living in a very radical sense in the moment. Someone described you as being almost like an organism,
simply
responding to the stimuli of the moment.
It is simply a living organism responding to the stimuli. It is not reacting to the questions. I am not giving any answers to your questions. I am trying to...
You're not reflecting, in other words. Is that right?
No. What is happening here, let me put this this way, that... It is my interest to point out that, first of all, you have no questions of your own. And all the questions that you are throwing at yourself and throwing at others are born out of the answers you already have. So actually, there is no questioner who is asking the questions. There is nobody who is talking. There is no talker who is talking. There is just a talking.
Well, then who are you?
The question is immaterial and irrelevant. There is just a talking.
But see, there's something absurd about that. The fact is you and I are sitting here, and we are actually working very hard. Intellectually, we're grappling with a very complex issue.
You are very intellectual, that I admit, but I don't think I have claims that...
Actually, I think I'm starting to go mad.
You don't feel like hitting me. Probably your listeners will. Throw tomatoes and rotten
eggs. Can I get back to where you are right now? See, you are saying some very radical things about thinking, about reflection, about memory, about desire, about the whole struggle.
Let me interrupt you. Now we are on the subject of memory. I have just read somewhere or heard somewhere that those who have studied the anatomy of memory have discovered that the process of memory is occurring not where we supposed it to formulate in the one area of the brain, but in different parts of the brain, you know. So for all I know, that every cell here in this body may have a memory of its own. We have to know a lot more about memory. Memory is all that is there. and we have no way of finding out what that memory is, how it is processed by the brain.
There is more, though, than just a series of individual cells, because those cells collectively form memory or thinking processes, don't they? They are more than the sum of their parts.
That is our assumption. The cells are all individual. There is no central agency controlling. You may say that I'm not competent enough to say all these things. I am not a scientist. But yet, you see, what I have observed, you see, in my own way, how they are expressing themselves.
Well, how then did a group of scientists come together at Alamogordo in New Mexico in the 1940s, and at the end of a process of collective pooling of those individual cells of each of their brains, produce far more power than those brain cells could produce individually, and far more than those individuals, because they developed the atomic bomb?
Yes, but now you see
that was something new.
Now the latest theory, that was 40 years ago, now the latest theory is that you cannot understand anything through your study of the separate parts, but you have to study the whole, take the whole into consideration. You know, there's a scientific
theory. But their brains worked, didn't they? They actually worked and produced something that was up to that point new. It was a new thing to create nuclear fission.
Yes,
it was an action of brain on matter.
That is, so obviously, whatever matter is put in there comes out. That's all that I'm saying. The human brain is no different from the computer there.
Yes, but you are saying there is something more there, because
no.
That was more than a simple random construction of inputs. Those inputs actually work to produce something that was
that has a
not only intellectually more than the sum of its parts, but actually acted on the world in a way which was unique.
Yeah, but it is, if there is any such thing as evolution, the simple things become very complex. It started with the molecular thing, and then Dalton's atomic theory we studied.
So what I'm interested in is how we preserve human identity. I can see that you're not going to be all that interested in that.
No, I am questioning what you
yes.
call identity,
yes,
the
exactly.
self, the I, the soul, the mind.
Okay.
What you call identity is the memory. That
all
is
right.
all that is there.
Can I see if we can tease out
yes.
how what you are saying would take effect in someone's life? Say if the people tonight are listening to you and are greatly intrigued by what you're saying.
I think this is some...
What do you suggest should be the response of people to what you're saying?
This is something which cannot be put into the value system. It has no value. Since it has no value for the individual, it has no value for the society.
It's simply an observation.
It's an observation. Take it or leave it. This is what I have discovered.
But, you are saying some fairly radical things, aren't you?
I don't think that I am saying radical things.
You said that about four times, David. Actually.
You are saying that I am saying yes. radical things. I'm just saying things.
Yes.
You know, what
but
I am
you're
saying,
asking people to make some very serious evaluations of where they stand, the whole nature of belief and so on.
Yeah.
Now, would you say that it's good for people to continue the way they are in a confused state, or to conform themselves more to...
It is not my business to tell them how they should. You see, they are really interested, hungering, burning with this desire to find out the answers for their questions. They have to do it on their own. Dependence on external agency will destroy the possibility of discovering things for themselves and by themselves.
So,
and what I'm interested in is to point out that they don't need crutches.
You're on Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio right around Australia. John Cleary with you, and my guest this evening, Eugene Krishnamurti and Dr. David Milliken. We're discussing whether there is any purpose in life, whether there is any meaning in life. One of the things that Eugene says is that there is no such thing as the mind or the spirit, and that, in fact, all of us should rest where we are. Now, in fact, I get into trouble every time I say that, because, in fact, you will say, no, I'm not saying exactly that. But you are saying that there is a problem with the pursuit of belief in externalities, in purpose.
Yeah, I don't want to generalize. We want to believe, and we need to believe. And so, what is belief? Is there anybody who believes, this is what I'm trying to
emphasize, there is just a belief, but there is no believer there.
But see, most people would say that that's absurd. Everyone is conscious of themselves.
They become conscious of themselves through the knowledge that is given to them. Otherwise, you have no way of knowing anything about yourself. And this fancy idea of finding out who you are, what you are, is an exercise in futility.
Do you know, I had an interesting thought when I was reading through your material. I know of a couple of other places where I've encountered something like the extreme process of doubt that you're asking people to engage in. One is a French writer called Jacques Ellul, who has developed this theory that the people should not attach themselves to a whole range of doctrinal expressions, because it is doctrines and firmly held ideologies that have brought mankind to the situation they're in. And I've got another friend here in Australia, his name's Philip Adams, who says that we ought to understand that everything is meaningless. And if you accept meaninglessness as being the substance of all reality, then you won't get passionate about anything. Therefore, you won't have the passion to even go out and kill someone.
What exactly do they mean when they say you have to accept the meaninglessness of life? It's no different from the way you are asserting that there is a meaning, there is a purpose to life. Both the statements are exactly the same, put in a different way. The opposite and reverse are the same coin.
I'll give you the telephone numbers in case you'd like to ring and participate in this conversation, because in just a few minutes' time, that's exactly what you can do. On Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio right around Australia, UG Krishnamurti is talking with David Milliken and myself. And the telephone number for you to participate in this conversation is 0800 020 800 from wherever you are, except Western Australia. And before we take some calls, we just take a break for some music.
You're on ABC Radio Around Australia, John Cleary with you, and my guests this evening, UG Krishnamurti and David Milliken. We're looking at the meaning of life, among other things, whether there is any, whether it can be found. Radical doubt, what sort of place does it have in the universe? David, you're asking a couple of questions.
Yes. Look, can I ask you, do you have any sense of obligation
to
anyone outside of yourself?
I have no obligation to myself, first of all.
Yes.
So it's a reflection of...
All right. Well, see, I'm trying to get back to this issue of what the implications are of what you're saying.
Of what I'm saying.
In people's lives.
What am I saying? Can you sum up in one word? No, I'm not trying to doubt.
No, I'll have a go. I hear you saying...
I ask people very often...
Yes.
If somebody asks you, what does UG say?
Yes.
Tell me, see, they say, you are saying this, not that. They always compare me with this man, that man, Buddha said this, Jesus said this. But what am I saying? I really don't know. I'm not trying to mystify the whole thing. I really do not know what I'm saying. But whatever I'm saying is yours. That's the reason why I say I have no copyright at all. I have no intellectual property rights of any kind. You are the one that is bringing out whatever is coming out of
you. You've been traveling for 60 years. You haven't slept in the one place for more than six months at a time.
Stretch.
Which is an astonishing feat in itself. And you are constantly addressing
people.
And
let me tell you that, you see, I don't like traveling.
That's all more remarkable.
Constant Socratic question.
Yes. So, why are you saying these things? Why do you go into the trouble?
You are asking me questions. Some friend suggested that I should go on air here, and it was he who arranged it.
You'll assume no responsibility for being here. Has this decision been made for you?
Yes, certainly. And I do not expect anything to happen to anybody after listening to me. I am not interested in helping them to change their lives, to better their lives, you see. So now that they have found out that the traditional, conventional things have not helped them, they are tracking around for gurus. And you have gurus of all shapes, sizes, and colors flooding this market. When they find that the gurus cannot deliver the goods, they turn to, as you refer to, the body, mind, and spirit festival here, the body, the whole earth festival there in the United States when that article
Now, you're very dismissive of all of this paraphernalia, aren't you?
I'm not dismissing that. People are looking for the answers of the same kind. So, as we said before, what they are interested in is happiness. You see, so there is no such thing as happiness. The moment you say that you are happy, the demand to keep that sensation of happiness to last longer. And this living organism does not know what happiness is. This does not know what pain is. The pain is a healer here, you know. But pain becomes more acute when you try to link up these different sensations of pain into one continuous moment of pain. Then it is more acute than otherwise, you see. That's all that I'm saying. I'm not for a moment saying that, you see, if there is a pain, there is no reason to pray to God or do something to prove to yourself that you can bear pain, endure pain, either for spiritual reasons or other reasons, but there is some way you can relieve yourself of pain. Go ahead and do it. That's all that I'm saying.
On Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio, it's time for your calls. Let's leap around Australia and straight away we'll go to Brisbane, to Deborah in Brisbane. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good. I was just wondering, is this man for New Age or is he against it? Like, I haven't been able to work out.
Well, what's the difference between the old age and the new age?
Well,
these are two different phases.
When you started the program, I was actually driving home from church.
Yes.
And I heard it and I thought, oh, this would be interesting because I'd like to know, you know, what the story is with the new age movement, because I've only just sort of started hearing a fair bit about it. And then you have sort of said nothing against it. If anything, I see that you are for the new age movement, because nothing in your life includes Jesus. You think that you can do anything on your own. But then I don't know that you even think that, because you're saying that you don't think and you don't really say, like, I have an awful lot of trouble understanding what you are saying.
Yeah.
You're using a lot of big words.
Now join the ranks.
What actually I'm saying is a very simple thing, that there is no such thing as an individual at all. So the individual is created by what you call culture or society. So you don't have any experience of your own. You don't have any thoughts of your own. You have nothing which you can call your own. If you want to experience the fact that you have a physical body, you have to use the knowledge that is given to us. That's the only way you can experience that.
And how did you work this out, though? Like, how can you say, I mean, then you're saying that we don't exist.
No, the fact that you assure yourself that you exist becomes possible only through the help of the knowledge that is given to us.
And how will we put on this earth?
Otherwise, you have no way of knowing that you exist. Much less when you die, you have no way of knowing that you are dead, because the experiencer who experiences life through the help of knowledge that is given to us will be absent there. The experiencer has to come to an end before what we call death can occur.
So does that mean you stand against the tradition of reincarnation as well? Yeah.
You know, I don't want to go into this, the linguistic analysis of the words and all that. The word spirit means...
Hang on, Deborah, just give us a chance.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, but the thing is, I do believe in Jesus Christ.
You can believe in Jesus Christ, and somebody else believes in Krishna there in India, somebody else believes in Muhammad there. So the belief separates you from the rest of mankind.
But see, I know...
Do you see that point?
And I know...
You can believe in what you like, Jesus, Muhammad, Krishna, or any God, but the moment you try to make others believe in your Jesus, you have created a war there.
No.
Sure.
No way.
Belief separates you from everybody. I believe in God, you don't believe in God. Where do we go from there?
No, well, let me just...
You can believe in anything you like. You can believe in Jesus. You can walk hand in hand with God.
That's right, and I do.
Yeah, you do, I know that.
I believe, right, now you let me finish.
Yes.
I believe that He created me, I've been put on this earth, I make the decision that, okay, I believe in Him, and I'm going to call myself a Christian because I believe in Him, and because I have that choice, He gave us that choice. The thing is, He's going to come again, and all those...
That's fine, that's just fine. You may believe that Jesus put you there, but your parents made love.
Hey,
And you are the result of that. Now Jesus put you there on this planet.
And then when I die and I face judgment, and when you die and you face judgment, are you going to be saying to him, hey, you know, big guy, you didn't, I don't exist, you know, this isn't really happening?
I would rather go to hell than heaven.
Why?
I'm already there.
Why?
Because you are creating hell in the name of creating heaven on this earth. You have turned this beautiful heaven into hell.
But we're not in heaven, we are on earth.
We are in hell and you will remain in hell.
Why are you blaming Deborah for creating hell and not yourself? Aren't you contributing?
I'm not singling her out, but the totality of mankind, its desire to create heaven on this earth, has turned this wonderful thing into hell.
Thanks,
Derek. Do you realize you just created a value judgment there, which you said you don't do?
It's a descriptive word, but not a value judgment. I'm not trying to be clever.
No, but you said you'd rather be in hell rather than heaven because we are creating hell on earth.
Yes. In our desire to create heaven on this earth.
So you obviously see that there's another way of proceeding.
No. But you see, if you forget about heaven.
But you are. You believe you have an insight, which is going to assist the process of things.
I don't believe in heaven at all. What I'm saying is that in your desire to create heaven on this earth is turning this into hell because this heaven is already here, right? I sort of agree with you.
Yes.
That's all that is there. Mm. So in your desire to create your own ideational, mentational concept of heaven on this is turning what already a heaven into hell.
We'll push on to Matthew in Sydney. Hello, Matthew. Welcome to the program.
Hello there, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
I would like to just say that fundamentally I agree with what Eugene's saying. I think tonight's a good example of the problem.
What's he saying, please?
What am I saying?
Yes, he's going to ask you, what is he saying?
I'm trying to be funny, you think I'm not.
No, you're certainly not trying to be funny. What you are saying, as far as I'm concerned, is a restatement of the old materialistic position, which is that there really is nothing in the universe but matter in motion, and that...
If you know something that is no longer the scientific dogma today, because they say that there is no such thing as matter at all. So that was 19th century idea.
Well, no, there's still some kind of material reality. I don't think...
You have no way of experiencing the material reality of anything except through the use of what you call thought. So it is the thought that invests whatever you touch, feel, see, and experience, the materiality and substance.
Well, that's true. Ultimately, there's
yes.
only the perception of matter, if you want to get down to that level. But what I can see tonight, the problem is that we're trying to speak to the general populace out there in philosophical terms, and unfortunately the general populace isn't well educated in the ways of philosophy. I think something you've missed in your statement of things tonight is that evolution and the attitudes of the community does imbue the individual with a sense of self-worth, that ultimately we are important to ourselves, and that's something which is separate to the materialistic background.
That is true. We can live in that hope and die in hope.
Well, that's right. There are two realities. There's the material reality of the universe, that ultimately everything is dust, ultimately everything is pointless, and there's the reality of our own minds, that we are important. And I liken it to, say, a game of football, that although we recognize that the result of the game is ultimately immaterial, that it's quite inconsequential, we do get involved in it and we do treat it very importantly at the time. So there are these two planes.
We're just running into our time theme. It crashed in rather heavily. Matthew, I'll have to get you to hang on there. We've only got about 30 seconds to news, and the theme crashed rather heavily over what you were saying. But it nevertheless was a timely reminder that on ABC Radio, you're listening to Sunday Night Talk. Our guests, Eugene Krishnamurti and David Milliken, and of course you. And we'll be back with you after the news on ABC Radio, where it's 11 o'clock.
Whenever we have been talking.
Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio, wherever you are in Australia. John Cleary with you. My guest this evening, Yuji Krishnamurti and David Milliken. We're discussing meaning and purpose, particularly this weekend. The third Australian Mind, Body and Spirit Festival is happening in Sydney, soon to go to Melbourne, with workshops in energy healing, past lives and karmic relationships. But at the same time, Yuji Krishnamurti is in town proclaiming that there is no such thing as the mind, body or spirit, and that spiritual seekers may in fact be wasting their time meditating, praying and worshipping. So what's the point of living at all? That's part of what we're discussing this evening. And just before the news break, we did unfortunately have a difficulty with Matthew in Sydney. Matthew, is still there? We've lost Matthew, unfortunately. Well, sorry about that, Matthew, but we'll proceed with this conversation. David, you were about to make a point.
Yes, look, I just want to read a quote, Yuji, out of this book that's been put together of conversations between you and other people. You say that after someone's been pressing you in the way I have to sort of try and say, what is it that you can say for certain? And you said, all I can really guarantee you is that as long as you are searching for happiness, you will remain unhappy. This is a fact.
That is within the field of the experiencing of everybody, whether they know it or not. The moment, you see, it's a sensation. Happiness is a sensation like any other sensation. The moment you give a name and call that happiness, then the demand to make that last longer than its natural duration of life is bound to be there.
Mm.
So this living organism is not interested in happiness and happiness, boredom. No boredom, pleasure, pain. These are all sensations. Whether it is a pleasurable sensation or painful sensation, the living organism has no way of separating itself from that. So through the help of the knowledge we have, which is the past memory, separates you from that particular sensation and calls it sensation of happiness. And you tell yourself that I am happy. Otherwise, you have no way of experiencing that sensation as happiness.
So do you experience happiness yourself?
I really do not know what happiness is like, so I will never be unhappy.
Do you have good days and bad days?
The good days and bad days, in what sense? There is no such thing as boredom for me. The moment you say that you are bored, the demand to do something about boredom is bound to be there. So because you feel that there is something more interesting, more purposeful, more meaningful that you can do than what is actually happening there.
You're actually interested in life, though, because you are here as an animated individual. You commit yourself to a conversation for the moment of that conversation.
Yes, there is only a conversation going on between us both, but there is nobody who is carrying on this conversation.
Tell me, do you sense that you have finished the search, or that you are out of the search?
The goal is the most important thing, you see. So we are not ready to brush aside the goal. It doesn't matter what the goal is. The goal can be permanent happiness, permanent pleasure, enlightenment, this, that, or the other. So as long as you accept the goal, so long there is bound to be a search. The search cannot come to an end unless the goal is out of the way. Mm.
And while there is a search, and while there's the idea of a goal, there will be unhappiness and there will be pain.
Certainly. There is a demand to have more and more of the same and less of the other.
Well, just let me ask this one other question then. If that is the case, what I keep feeling from what you're saying is that we should pull ourselves away from engaging a lot of the normal processes that lead towards belief. We should pull ourselves away and be quietistic in the face of all this.
You have no part to play there at all. What you call you, the you as you know yourself and the you as you experience yourself, cannot do what you are suggesting. It cannot separate itself and be a watcher, you see, or an observer of what is going on there.
So how do you make decisions? I mean, every time I ask the implications of what you're saying.
You are answering your own questions. It may sound very funny to you. I am not answering any questions. What I am saying all the time is, that you really do not want an answer to the question, because all your questions are, they're born out of the answers you already have. And another problem we have here is that if there is any answer, I say there is no answer to your question. You already have the answer. The questioner comes to an end. The questioner and the question are not two different things.
But see, I don't believe that. The fact is, I do want answers.
Yes, but...
But are you just saying that I've already got the answers within myself?
You want the answers to be strengthened and fortified. So you are not in a position to either accept or reject what I am saying. You reject because it doesn't fit into the answer you already have. What you are interested in is modifying that, you see, changing it, altering it. But actually, you are not ready to be free from the answer. Sorry.
Let's take a few calls. Particularly, we're going to go to Barrel, to Lena in Barrel, New South Wales. Hello, Lena, how are you?
Hello, I'm well, thank you.
Welcome.
Welcome, thank you.
What would you like to say?
Well, I don't have any problem with what UG.
Yes, right, UG.
UG is a useless guy, that's what they call me in India.
Also, he's also
they call me a useless guy.
I've also heard that you're the un-guru.
I'm surprised that what I'm saying makes some sense to you. Does it make a sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
Supposing some friend asks you, what does this man say? What would you tell him or her, as the case may be?
Oh, I'd have to say...
I'm not trying to put you in a spot.
No, I'm fine. I'm over all the nerves and things now. But I'd have to say... Well, I guess you're not...
It's a lot of hot air.
Well, yeah, you're not...
Yeah, yes, you agree with me.
Yeah, you're not really saying anything that, for me personally, isn't really a belief. I mean, when you start going off in the thing about, you know, what is the mind and this sort of thing, well, we can't... I do agree with you. We can't measure it or equate it, and what's the point of worrying about it, really?
But you really don't want an answer for that question, what is mind, because you have all the answers.
I don't have all the answers.
Very good. And
I don't need to.
It makes it easy.
It's impossible, you know.
What would you like to ask, Lena? Is there a particular question you had in mind?
What do you want?
There isn't a question that I have, but the word love, it's a word.
It's just a word.
It's a word.
It's a four-lettered word.
It is a four-lettered word. The word love, it's a word.
It's just a word.
It's a word.
It's a four-lettered word.
It is a four-lettered word, but it imbues...
Supposing the love you expect...
Beg your pardon?
Supposing the love you expect is denied to you, what would be there in its place?
Well, I can't expect it. My son was away for a few days the other day, and when he came back, he's a little boy, he's six, and when he came back, I thought, well, what am I going to say to him? Here we are standing together. Yes. And I said, did you have a good time? And he said, yes. And I said, you're smiling, it's nice to see you. And then I found myself saying, oh, did you miss me?
Yes.
And he said, yes.
Yes.
And I said, oh, did you really miss me? And he said, yeah, I missed you.
Yes.
And I said, yeah, I missed you too.
Yes.
And then I thought later, oh, what am I putting on him?
You are really putting on him. You are asking him to tell you that he missed you.
Yeah, and what he experienced 2 days ago, it's not relevant. Yeah?
Yes.
It's past. What is he feeling right now? He's standing there, you know, in the car park.
Yes.
You know, and I realized, gee, I have to really be much more mindful, much more aware of what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, what I'm saying, whatever. But
that's being extraordinarily sensitive, Lena.
Good.
Thank you.
Something for me with this a sensation that we feel is warmth. I mean, it's a sensation. And
how is it different and distinct from any other sensation?
Yes.
Is it?
Is it?
I'm asking you.
Well.
Why do you want to separate that?
In as much as...
From all the other sensations.
Okay. In as much as in a sensation of warmth,
If that is missing there, if that is denied to you...
No, not, well, denied to me.
What would you do?
Me, it's denied me, you know. The sun doesn't shine.
Yeah.
I don't feel the warmth. Well, something...
You stay indoors.
I stay indoors, or I die, or I don't know, you know, if I can't imagine it, but if the warmth doesn't come from the sun, then, well, you know, everything's very different. But in warmth, growth occurs.
There is that biological drive, isn't there? Now, it seems to me that the organism, if you want to reduce it to being the organic, is driven to develop and to grow, and that in that,
only
the use of the mind, the use of the brain, the use of the satisfactions are towards that growth.
It is not involved at all, the brain, the use of
so
the
you,
brain.
So you regard the brain as an evolutionary accident?
Yes, it is an accident, not only
an aberration?
It's an aberration. There's something radically wrong with the human brain, you see. It's
you actually see it as a mistake, don't you?
It's a neurological disorder in the brain.
Okay. So thanks, Lena, for your call.
The thought is born out of the neurological disorder, and thought in its very nature is violent.
Are you familiar with Arthur Koestler's book, The Ghost in the Machine?
No, I'm illiterate. I don't read any books.
Let's push on to Mount Isa, to Jennifer in Mount Isa. Hi, Jennifer.
Good evening. I would like to ask you, G, are you saying, Eugene, that it is all right not to actively use the mind, the emotions, the memory, not to actively pursue a religious faith or relationships with people, but rather just to be here to absorb and to observe, to be content and wait and, you know, try to achieve harmony with surroundings and to wait to see if enlightenment may come? Is this what you're telling us?
No. You have to use that. If you don't use that, that is you. There is no other you other than the movement that is going on there, doing all these things. If that is not there, and if you are unlucky that it is absent for 1/1,000,000,000th of a second, you will drop dead. What will be left there is not your concern. If you live its own life.
I didn't quite get that on.
Yeah. Look, let me see if I can help you out, because I have the same feeling that you do. I think that that the implications of what UG is saying is that we should, in a sense, disengage ourselves from a lot of practices that have belaboured our lives.
Yes, that
and
is
one of those practices.
It's all right if we do.
What I'm saying is, whatever you are doing is consuming tremendous, tremendous amount of energy.
Yes.
And if that is released, living becomes a very simple thing.
Yes.
So you don't think about living?
No.
No.
It's just living its own life. There is nothing to think about.
Living is living is living.
It's just living its own life.
How do you make decisions then? How do you choose to go, if you're faced with a choice? Two people walk up to you and say, friends of yours, and say, I want you to come over here. The other says, I want you to go over there.
I flip a coin.
Do you make major decisions like that?
No. It's too much of a hassle for me to decide. I just flip a coin.
Hmm.
All the great decisions in my life, including my marriage, you see, that flipping of a coin decided.
Oh.
It may sound very funny to you. But
so
that's the way I have my 74 years. But I don't regret afterwards. There's no reason for me.
There's no reason for regret in that circumstance.
Well, it actually doesn't exist. So.
Okay, thanks for that, Jennifer.
This is Sunday Night Talk with John Cleary, bringing you the sound of Australia.
Now to the next call on the board, to Donald in Brisbane. Hi there, Donald. How are you? Donald, are you with us?
Still here.
Good.
Okay, just a couple of bit of preamble there. Have you heard of a gentleman called Alain Denelu? You haven't?
No.
Ask me to spell it. But anyway, it's just that he's, the gentleman reminds me a bit of, some books this gentleman wrote, a particular Indian religious sect. But I say that, as I say, guardedly, because it's a long time since I've looked at it. It was very depressing. Very nihilistic. But, now when I rang up, you know, I was just thinking about that. I'm surprised you people are having trouble with the gentleman. I'll probably make a mess of things in a minute, Barson.
Okay, tell us what he's saying then.
No, I wouldn't presume.
Well, if you say that we're having trouble, you apparently are not.
I myself have trouble. I don't know what I'm saying.
What's the point you want to make, Donald, before we,
being facetious? No, it's just that, well, what I should say is I would have thought that you'd have had a bit more, perhaps not empathy with him, but, well, that's all I can say, I suppose. Mm. But what I was going to say was perhaps, you know, listening to the gentleman is, a matter of, be careful, sort of, your idea of what the gentleman's saying is not necessarily, you know, depends where you're coming from. In a sense, I think the gentleman's been saying that to people too, insofar as he hasn't really said to stop these things. He's perhaps pointed out to you that whatever these preoccupations of ours are, they are of little consequence, and they're just perhaps markers on the road, and getting back to the idea of the goal, and not to lose sight of that. They're not, you know, in the sense of one might discover Jesus Christ one day, sort of, I suppose, in the sense it's a glorified form of consumerism. One takes up stamp collecting one day and drops it and tries coin collecting the next day. You appreciate that?
Fine.
Tom, I think you've sort of obviously, I mean, you've touched a level of understanding of that that I think sort of resonates a tad here.
All right.
Good on you.
Yes, okay.
Is that all you want to say?
No, that's fine.
Great.
I guess that while the game's good.
You're safe. All right. Bye-bye. Let's go on to Michelle up in Mackay. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Good, thank you.
How's the weather in Mackay?
Well, it's just rain, but it's beautiful all the time. Here's a bit of advertising for you, Eugene. Come up to Mackay. It's a wonderful place. Spend 6 months up here. It'll be stimulating, not boring, exciting, perfect weather, perfect people.
Thank you very much indeed for the invitation.
Anyhow.
Michelle, what do you want to say? now the commercial's out of the way.
Rightio. Eugene, I was just wondering, would you agree or do you feel any empathy with what I'm saying, that your childhood, being that it was with criminals and this and that, I think you said earlier, do you feel that growth occurs not so much under the sun, as the lady was saying earlier, but growth can also occur and occurs more rapidly and more intuitively and more deeply and more intelligently with darkness and pain and alternatives?
I'm not with you. Say that again.
Ah, there you go. You're not with me now. With your childhood, it wasn't the mother and father and normal suburban life, whatever that.
I don't know why we should blame our poor mothers for all of our problems here.
No, I'm not saying it.
Yes, that's the bizarre theory of Freud, you know.
Oh, no, I wouldn't blame my parents. I don't do anything for anybody. I don't believe.
In my case, I didn't have to do anything, hate her or love her.
No, of course. Yeah.
She died when I was 7 days old. That was the end.
Yeah, but the thing,
if she lived longer, probably she would have committed suicide for having brought into this world a child like me.
wasn't it your auntie who said that you have the heart of a butcher?
My grandmother said that, you see.
Mm. I mean, the way you take to all of the canons of philosophy, I would say yes.
Anyway, Michelle, what is the substantial point you're wanting to make?
Well, does he see that people can grow through darkness and pain as well as happiness, whether that's real or unreal? And also, another thing I just want to get in is, you seem to think that you don't have any effect on the masses. Mm. And even though I appreciate the fact that you're saying that you know, there's no past lives and all that. That's great that you're saying that, because I don't believe there's any past lives, future lives, anything. It's just happening right now. But don't you realise a lot of the masses in this country can't see that? And they need to go to church, or they need to go somewhere, because otherwise there'll be total anarchy. They just don't have the insight or intelligence. Something's missing up there. God made a mistake when he created man.
Obviously he made a big mistake.
Yeah.
And he needs your help and my help to correct the mistake he made.
Yeah.
Now, joking apart, I'm not saying anything for or against past life or future life. If you're really interested in finding out whether there is any life after, it is very necessary for you to find out what is there now. What do you think will reincarnate?
But didn't you say before that there are no past lives and no future lives?
No, you have to find out for yourself the answer to that question. What is there now?
But I know the answer to that question, and there isn't.
That will reincarnate after you are dead. You are already dead. You are concerned about what will happen after your death.
I'm not, because...
Sure, yes. Why should you be concerned after reincarnation?
But there's no...
That makes it difficult for you to live now.
No, it doesn't. I know what's going to happen when I die. I'm going to go to sleep and my body will be eaten by...
You are not... No. You are not going to see that. You are not going to preside over your own death.
No, I am.
No.
My body will be going...
The body has no such thing as death. That's all that I'm saying.
Well, it doesn't die because it'll be in worms' tummies.
Yes.
And then it'll become part... Yeah,
they will have a field day, the worms.
Huh?
They will have a field day. Or if you burn the body, it will enrich the soil. So that's not our concern.
Yeah. But isn't that good that it enriches the soil and does not more than...
Yes, good.
Should we do any more than that?
But it's a very... Horrible thought to think that this is going to be reduced to ashes, and isn't it?
Horrible. I think it's a beautiful thought.
Yeah, beautiful. Good.
I think.
I've stunned you there, haven't I?
Well, the question is whether you need to think about those things at all, really, isn't it?
Well, you don't need to once you know that they're
evil.
Mm-hmm.
And once you realise that nothing is really necessary.
See, Eugene, is it possible for Michelle to say that she knows that something is true? She said, I know.
What does it mean?
Yes. You see, Eugene wouldn't want you to say that. I mean, wouldn't regard
that really
as being a valid thing to say, that you know something.
What does it mean, you know?
Can I ask you now?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
It doesn't matter that you don't want me to know.
No. What do you mean when you say, I know?
I know.
Yes.
I mean, that's all that matters, is that I know. It doesn't matter that you don't know or know.
I don't know a thing. I'm surprised you know.
But I know for me.
Yes, that's good.
So it's all subjective.
Yes. That's all that is there.
Mm.
Our own anybody says that, you see, there is an objective way of looking at things, feeling things, and experiencing things, is getting himself and getting others.
Michelle, thank you very much for that.
Would you say, Eugene, that are you a nihilist? I mean, would that be a reasonable definition of your position?
It's just a cheap device on the part of the people to throw that at me. See, I'm not a nihilist at all. I don't know what nihilism means. I'm only questioning the belief, the anatomy of belief, why we believe in things. That's all that I'm saying.
So you have acquired admiration for Socrates.
I don't know. He paid a very heavy price.
It's just somebody is likely to offer you the hemlock sooner or later.
I would drink it with a second thought.
We need to tell people that Socrates was put to death because he was disturbing the young men in Athens at the time.
By getting them to ask questions.
So far, I'm not a threat. You see, the moment they find me...
Mm. And yes, Socrates was a philosopher.
They will do everything possible to eliminate me. It's a threat as a matter of fact, you see.
To simply ask why is a threat.
Yes, no. It's a threat to what you know of yourself, what you experience of yourself. It is undermining the very foundation of your conventional logic.
Of course it is. What you say is simply disturbing
the,
on one level.
The logical structure that is there is interesting in maintaining its continuity. So
what is knowledge after all? Knowledge gives me power. I know you do not know.
You see,
so there is no such thing as knowledge for the sake of knowledge.
Mm. You're on Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio, right around Australia, John Cleary with you. We're seeking to understand the mind of UG Krishnamurti. We're seeking to understand why about a number of things, including why we believe, where there's a need to believe, what is happiness. Is it relevant? And Dr. David Milliken, head of ABC Religious Department and co-author of the book Worlds Apart, is the other participant in this discussion. And, of course, you at home. The number, if you'd like to join us, is 008-02-8800. Let's skip along and take a couple more calls now to Grant in Melbourne. Hi, Grant.
Hello. In what I want to say, I'm going to be forced to use some, you know, conventional ideas, conventional English to convey some ideas. But fundamentally, I would have to say I have some agreement with your guest. I think something that might make it a little easier for people to, and here I go using these words, understand what he's saying. Is that there is fundamentally no such thing as a consciousness. From the point of view that we are purely and simply things that we do, things that we, say, as he was saying before about we are simply talking, there is no people talking, there is simply talking happening. We are simply...
Do you really believe that, Grant?
Well, let me finish.
Yeah.
Let me finish. There is simply... It is simply the result of what is happening to us and what has happened to us in the past. The reason that I'd have to put it in quite that way... I'm involved with... I'm studying computer science at university at the moment. In fact, I'm supposed to be studying right now for an exam tomorrow. But I keep on thinking of what is known to date about neural networks, which is largely modelled on what we know of the brain. And they exhibit behaviour based upon things that have happened to them in the past, and things that are happening to them at the moment. Now, if you then extend that out into an incredibly more complex type of arrangement, such as you find in the human brain, you can take the same step of logic, you know, where what we do and what we express is purely a result of what is happening and has happened to us.
And that's all. And your identity as a person is just that.
Well,
I'm just wondering whether you really believe that.
Well,
you say you are studying computers. Basically, I maintain there is no difference between the way the human brain is functioning and the computer out there. But the day you introduce the element of thinking into the computers, you have destroyed the usefulness of the computers totally.
They'll then become dangerously unguided missiles.
Unguarded missiles.
Grant, the quest for AI is a useless one.
Yes. What all is there is only a data bank or memory bank. What I'm suggesting is that the constant use of memory to maintain your identity all the time, whether you are asleep or awake or dreaming, is really the human problem there.
Grant, thanks for that. Let's go to Gladstone in Queensland now to John. Hi, John. How are you?
Oh, not bad, thank you.
Thanks for waiting.
That's okay. I'd like to ask Mr. Murdy a question, well, one of many that I have on my pieces of paper here. Does he believe...
All questions are the variations of the same question, so ask one question.
Fine. Okay.
That makes it very simple.
Okay. I, w- I wouldn't ask many, put it that way.
Who won the cricket this afternoon?
It's as meaningful as any other question. As interesting as any other question. Joking apart, what's your question?
Okay, thank you. do you believe in the human soul, the soul according to any dictionary that you have read?
What is the point in asking that question? You believe in the human soul.
No, I'm asking you.
I say no.
You say no.
No.
Well, how can you say no?
How can you say there is a soul in exactly the same way I can say that there is no soul?
Well,
you cut your body and see if there is anything there. That's the only way to know.
Okay, right. Are you content?
They use the word soul because they didn't have any idea of a mind in those days. You know,
right.
That there is a center, that there is an entity, that there is a spirit, that there is an I, that there is this, that, and the other.
Right. Also, are you content in life?
Content?
Content.
I really don't know a thing about life. So I never ask the question at all. I'm not all the time trying to understand what this is all about. Because I don't have any answers. The answers given by others don't interest me at all.
Well,
because life is living its own life, whatever it is. So anything you understand of life is fit in the framework of the knowledge we have. So what we are trying to understand or know of life is to use the dead knowledge we have. Even that knowledge is not ours. It's passed on to us from generation to generation. So we dare not touch life if through some strange chance or accident, this dead structure which we are using, try to understand, capture, contain, and give expression to what we call life, then this dead structure will be finished.
Okay. Please be a little patient with me. You obviously have very infinite thought processes. Don't say to me what...
That's an assumption on your part.
You know, well...
Trying to be
no, a
man of humility or any such thing.
Okay, but it just seems to be very contradicting. A lot of things that you have said tonight seem to be very contradicting. We as... Since we grow up in this world with matter and everything else, we grow up, we learn the meaning of life. You know, we may never find that out, you know, but we grow up with a lot of meaning of words that the English language means. We all look at dictionaries to use the words. We believe in the meaning of the word, that revolves around everything we speak, we say, we know the meaning. And it seems very contradicting when you...
No, if you leave it at that, just leave the meaning of the word alone without creating an image around it, then it would be a simple thing to deal with the words and the use of words.
Okay, how can you use the word?
It's a mechanical thing.
How do you know the meaning of the
word? I don't know the meaning of the whatever the dictionary says. That's all that is there for me.
How did you know this?
I don't know. Somebody invented the language. I didn't.
Right.
I'm forced to learn those words and use them. That's all I'm doing. It's a mechanical thing. That's all that I'm saying. I don't have any words of my own. I don't have any ideas of my own. I don't have any thoughts of my own.
Okay.
So it is only for purposes of communication. If that is not possible between two individuals, it will be very difficult for us to live in this world sanely and intelligently.
Right.
We'll have to end up in the loony bin singing loony tunes.
So what's the point you're wanting to make, John?
Well, it is very hard, John. I come on with questions. I'm not getting answers. I can understand to a point. Also, this is very trivial. Mr. Murdy, do you ever go to a shop and buy things, buy food? How do you know what food to buy?
It's a habit.
It's a habit?
Yes. Lifelong habit. I eat the same thing, you will be surprised.
So,
same thing, day after day, day after day.
What do you eat?
I eat some angel hair or some couscous, whatever you call it. Day after day, the same thing. I'm not interested in varieties of food. I don't care for varieties of tastes.
One other.
So that's why I say.
So, all right, John, you get one short go.
How old are you?
Huh?
That's not personal.
How long am I?
How old?
I am 74 years.
Thank you.
6 months, 15 days, 14 hours. And
now, there's
seconds.
A definite answer, John. That's probably the only one you're going to get this evening. Thanks for that. All right, so, let's get
going. I'm interested to pursue that a little further. Are you fairly austere in your personal habits?
Not at all. I don't have any habits, since you can call it. It's mechanical.
Do you take pleasure in music or sexuality?
Too old for sexuality.
Well, what about something like music? Do you have a sensual sort of side to you?
All music is pleasure. Sensuality. It's no different from any other sensual activity. You'll be surprised that if you let this listening mechanism to listen to music, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Fifth Symphony, you'll be surprised that you have to listen to the space between the two notes.
Do you have any concept of beauty?
The listener has a cultivated taste for music.
Mm.
So when I first went to England, I couldn't stand the Western music because I was not exposed. Now I have lived half my life in the West, so I can tolerate the Western music. But it's just a cultivated taste.
Do you have any concept of beauty?
You see, for all practical purposes, beauty doesn't exist. Where is beauty? Is it in the object or in the beholder's eye? Where is it? So, when once you freeze something there, within the framework of thought, then...
Once you name it, in that sense.
Yeah, that's beauty. The freezing is beauty.
Okay.
Otherwise, there is no such thing as beauty at all.
To David in Sydney. Hello, David, and welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Right, well, I've got a number of points. Some things I agree with UG, and perhaps I can clarify it for himself and perhaps other people. The first thing is about the question of purpose being useless. This is actually something that the German linguistic philosophers started off with. And basically, the way I explain my understanding of it is that it's like asking something like, what is the colour blue? It's basically a tautological question to presume.
No. Have you ever asked the question, what is blue? The physical eye does not see the colours as blue, red, green.
Right.
My grandmother told me, when I looked at it, she said, the sky is blue. And I have been repeating every time I looked at the sky, to myself and to others, the sky is blue. Otherwise, you have no way of looking at any color.
Right.
Except through the knowledge we have, which is memory.
Well,
and now some scientist comes along and tells us why the sky is blue. So we add this information... This knowledge that is given to us by the research scientist who has discovered why the sky is blue. So from then on, every time you look at the sky, you tell yourself that the sky is blue and that is why the sky is blue.
Yeah.
So in exactly the same way you look at things.
That's my point.
Through the use of memory.
My point is that there is a standard that we accept that this particular colour is blue. It's like saying, does a stone have a purpose? A stone to itself has no purpose, and that's the same as a human being. It's only human thought that believes that a human being must have a purpose, because perhaps a particular...
Do you have a purpose, if I may ask that question?
Do I have a purpose? Yeah.
If there is, what is your purpose of life?
This leads to my other point.
This you can answer.
Yeah, I can.
What is your purpose of life?
Can you let me lead up?
Sure, go ahead.
In my own way. The first thing is that I have quite a wholesome and full philosophy of life, and part of it is that there is no such thing as a purpose for human beings in an absolute sense. It doesn't make sense. However, it doesn't mean that human beings don't need purposes, no matter how artificial or perhaps relative they are, and I certainly know that I need a purpose, and or not a purpose, but a meaning for life, which I give, and I realise it's relative to myself, and that is one of unconditional love.
But didn't you say there is not meant to be a purpose for life?
No, no, what I'm saying is, in a philosophical sense, there is no need for human beings to have a purpose. We say, what is the purpose of life? Why should there be a purpose?
Why are you asking that question? The moment you ask how to live, you have created a problem for yourself there. The life is living its own life.
No,
you don't have a thing to do with it.
No, look, what I'm saying is, I agree with you.
Why are you asking this question, how to live?
I'm not asking you any questions. I'm telling you something. What I'm saying is, I'm explaining perhaps for other people, my understanding of the reason there is no purpose for life is because there is nothing that necessarily says there has to be one.
Then why do you choose to make the step to unconditional love as a reason for yourself?
This is what I'm saying. Because I have found in myself, and I'm...
What love has got to do with it?
Can I answer the question?
You have heard of this song there?
No, because I...
Tina Turner's song, What Love Has Got to Do With It.
Yeah, listen. But I have found, and I'm sure many other people have as well, that they need purpose in their life. It doesn't...
Forget about they.
Yeah, what?
Forget about they, them.
Right, okay, well, I...
What you have to say is more important than what anybody says about life.
I have found that it's important for me to have meaning and purpose in my life.
Because you don't see any meaning and purpose in your life, that is why we are thinking in terms of finding out the meaning and purpose of life.
Let me finish.
Go ahead.
I have found it's useful and perhaps necessary for me to have purpose and meaning in my life, which doesn't mean I don't recognize that that purpose and that meaning are completely relative to myself and perhaps have no absolute truth or validity. It's irrelevant whether we have purpose or not. I agree people don't have to have a purpose as a general statement. What I'm saying is I have discovered, and most other people from my experience find, that they need meaning and purpose. So then the question is, how do large groups of people on the planet, such as we have, survive together? We have to have some sort of fundamental laws which people obey, and the one which seems to work best, certainly for myself and my happiness, and I certainly feel happy whether you do or not, is unconditional love. And I'd suggest for most people, that's probably the healthiest way that we can all survive as well as possible.
So, well, anyway, the only thing I can say, good luck.
Yeah.
It may sound very cynical. But there it is.
Can I say what your philosophy seems to be is a severe stoicism that it sounds to me, just from my knowledge of psychology, that you've undergone such severe doubt, intellectual doubt, that you seem to deny the existence of thoughts and the whole thought system. And what I'd ask to you, when you seem to deny that there's any discrimination possible, if someone hit you in your left eye or hit you in your right eye, whether you'd be able to distinguish one hit from the other, and I'm sure you would. And this leads to my next point, which is that human beings are transient, and I suggest that maybe you don't be so scared of transience, and just as sense and feelings are transient, why not go with the flow? We only live here for a while. What's wrong with having a transient feeling? And that ties in, for me, in my philosophy of unconditional love. You say, well, what happens when there isn't any love? Well, if it's not unconditional love, then it's not going to be there when the conditions aren't satisfied. That's why it's unconditional love, say, for myself, that I have for myself, because it's always there. And if it's not, then I'm putting a condition on my love, which means that it's not there, so I get rid of the condition.
Well, the moment you use the word love, you have created the condition there.
Thanks, David, for that. We think we've got to the end of that presentation. You've got a fair amount of time to expand there. Well, let's get through a few calls reasonably quickly, so you can keep your questions or
your inquiries short. We'd appreciate it.
I'd like to put the challenge to people when they call up, exactly what is UG saying? But let's get some quick definitions of what UG is saying.
I want to know.
He's in a lot of trouble.
All right, to Philip in Adelaide. Hello, Philip.
Good evening. Look, I just want to make a comment on the most peaceful person that I've heard on radio for a long time.
Well, thank you, Philip.
I'm surprised.
Not you.
Good. That there is a peaceful man in this world.
No, yeah, that's it. I'm talking about your guest.
Yes.
I think it is wonderful. Now, I'm limited on my language. It's only English. And I think that's our problem, is that we can't express ourselves properly because of our language, you know.
That we're inadequate in talking to each other and communicating with each other generally.
Yeah. Mm. And
especially on this sort of complexity, this level of complexity, I agree. It's very frustrating.
The gentleman that you have there, he is so. It's the calmness that's got me. He's so calm. He's not rattled. He's. See, we use these expressions. That's all we've got, isn't it? Mm. And if I. I think he's beautiful. That's the only word I can express.
Well, thank you for that, Philip. UG takes that with grace, and we're moving.
No comment.
We're moving to the next call. Thanks.
Is that true?
What do you want me to say? He doesn't know me.
Let's go to Julie in Canberra. Hello, Julie. Welcome.
You asked me what your guest was. I think he's a hoax.
He's a hoax, good. Never was a truer word said.
Let me finish, please. Don't interrupt. I think I've wasted 2 hours of my time this evening. Generally, I'm a regular listener to this program, and I enjoy the variety of people. Although I'm not particularly religious, I usually enjoy the program. But I really think all the callers tonight have attempted to take you seriously and genuinely try to understand what your message is, but there is no message. You're just a charlatan.
Good.
That's all I have
to
say.
Fine.
Thank you, Julie.
For the compliment.
Thank you for being so direct.
All right. Why is that a compliment?
What do you want me to say? Huh? Yes, the other gentleman praised me, and she calls me a hoax, and somebody else calls me a beautiful person. So what's the difference?
To Eve now in Wingham in New South Wales.
Yes, I've been listening to the show tonight and right from the beginning, and I just feel that that perhaps you have exhausted yourself searching for this inner something that we all have within us, this void, this emptiness, which to me is God. A, because I've been sort of raised in that environment, and as I grew into adulthood, I grew in that faith, which is a gift, of course, and given to all. But there is a quote that says, "Be still and know that I am your God." Or another quote, "Our hearts are restless until they rest in you, O Lord." And also, might I suggest that perhaps you'd like to read the Confession of Saint Augustine?
Me? I said I'm illiterate and I don't know how to read.
I think you do.
Thanks, Eve, for that observation. Mm-hmm. All right, we're pushing on to take a few more calls. We've only got 7 or 8 minutes, so about 7 and a half exactly. So we'll get to your call if we can before we leave this evening. To Robert in Hobart. Hi there, Rob.
Hello. I'd like to ask Eugene, could he say something about, first of all, personal memories, whether they were important or not. And second, history as it's written down, let's say in the ancient Egyptians or clay tablets or, say, the history of the Second World War.
First, let me tell you that there is no such thing as personal memory at all. And your memory, my memory, is put in by our culture or society or whatever you want to call it. And secondly, the history is bunk. Just the way you color the events of your life, of yesterday and the day before, when you narrate them to somebody else, the historians also have, in their own way, interpret the events and present it as something different from what actually happened.
Henry Ford, indeed. Now, look, what you're saying reduces the energy and the passion of what I said to be one of the great expressions of the nobility of the human soul or the human person, namely that passion for the search for truth. Now, I'm saying something I think that's almost totally different from what you are. I believe people find their reality and their dignity in the very search,
you find,
in the pursuit.
Yeah, you find what you want to find. So since there is no way you can touch truth, capture that.
But you deny people access to all of the sources. You deny people access to history. You deny people access to their own metaphysical reflections, their own intuitions, their own instincts, and so on. And that's too big a price to pay.
We have to pay the price because our lives are influenced by what they thought and felt and experienced before.
Time for just a couple more calls to Robert in Melbourne. Hello, Robert.
Hello.
You've waited patiently.
I've waited patiently, yes. There's been a lot of talk about thinking and thought and so on, and I just wonder, what does UG have to say? What is thought? What does he think? What do you think thought is, UG?
You see, the question is irrelevant and immaterial for the simple reason that when you yourself and by yourself want to find out what thought is, what you will find in the place of that question, what thought is, all about thought. In other words, what I am emphasizing, overemphasizing, is that there is no thought at all.
Well, what is it that I'm perceiving as thought?
You are using the memory from the data bank put in by our culture to achieve a goal, to attain and accomplish some goal.
Yes, well, when I'm responding to what I hear you say, I have the experience of there being some sort of spontaneity about that, but it seems to be thinking.
Look, I agree with what you're saying, Robert. See, we've got to also allow the possibility that an idea as radical as this does sound to us absurd, and I think we've got to start from that. And the onus is on the person proposing the absurd thought, and the idea that we are not thinking and we don't even exist is a very absurd thought.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the idea of an absurd thought. It's so absurd, I have got trouble grappling and trying to grasp even what...
What actually is thought? It is memory. Thought is sound, you know that? When you tell yourself that you are happy, what happens there? What are you doing actually? Happy. Happiness, the word happiness, is memory. It's thought. It's sound.
The problem is, though, that even computer science these days says that intelligence is more than accumulated memory in a memory board. Scientists are grappling with this whole problem of artificial intelligence. They can't reach it because they're saying it is more than what you're saying it is.
If they have to, otherwise their research projects will come to an end. What they are really interested in...
It's a pretty cynical interpretation of science.
It may sound very cynical, but we admire science and scientists not because they have anything to say, but what they have done is the technology. It has become possible for you and me to sit here and talk to hundreds and hundreds of people across the country. That is why we are so thankful and grateful thousands, to the scientists. Thousands.
We like to think it's thousands. So,
all right, one last question from Steve in Melbourne. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Yes, I found it very interesting tonight. I'm writing a book at the moment, and I've mentioned it before to many people. I feel like my experience, when I talk about me in the abstract, the ego consciousness, I had an experience with what you call Kundalini.
Boy, that's something.
And that... That to me is like, for me...
You'll have to keep it brief, Steve. We're running out of time.
Right. Okay. Well, I believe that consciousness or loving active consciousness that has impact, because it's all relative, actually presents the reality to the small self from the big self in the form that the small self can understand.
Well, that's too much for me.
Oops.
Yes. Yeah, see, you. Well, you're going to have to leave it for another night, I'm afraid. Mm. Beaten us all. And time has beaten us too. You've been on Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio right around Australia. My guest this evening has been UG Krishnamurti, tagged by some the Un-Guru, by others as a seeker who stopped when he realized there was no point. And Dr. David Milliken, the head of ABC's religious department. I believe that you have a book that the Penguin are going to release under the
Not
title
my
of...
book, it's a biography written by one of the famous film directors.
And what's it called?
What a Man.
What a Man. It will be out in Penguin. Look for it in the shops. UG Krishnamurti, thank you so much for being with us on Sunday Night Talk this evening. If you'd like to get tapes of tonight's program, you can. $25 to ABC Radio Tapes, GPO Box 994, Sydney 2001. I'm John Cleary. My thanks this evening to Michael Mullins, Jennifer Fleming, Jane Marwick and Peter McLeod for so much work and, of course, to you at home. We'll be back again, same time next week for more in Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio, where the time is 12 midnight.
Thank you for having me on this program.